This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
I'll circle around and touch on a couple of things. More past few days, was talking about lineage. We chanted in the morning after the Heart Sutra, and it reminded me that I want to do two things. I want to revisit context within which we appear, and that the lineage is not just like a line from 2,500 years ago till now. It's a circle, actually, as well. Depends how you want to look at it, or different ways of looking at it. And I think we tend to get locked in on my life, who I am, Earth, maybe Mars someday. But I was talking with a friend a bit ago when I was coming out of that blown apart state. We're talking about grounding in the context of something else, a different practice, dowsing, actually. And so she was asking me, how do you ground? I said, well, or what's your sense of ground, I guess? And I wrote this down, so I'm going to read it. But started talking to her about it in the usual way. You know, well, take your shoes off, go outside and stand in the dirt. But as I was talking to her about that, I suddenly realized I expanded into the sense of the Earth in orbit around the sun, the Earth that we're on, with the other planets in a galaxy, which reminded me of something I'd read regarding the cycle of the sun having 22 orbits around the Milky Way before it runs out of fuel. And each of these orbits take 225 million years. So this is the kind of scope, actually, that our mind should be looking at like that. Then I read something else about Dzogchen expresses the view of true nature, which ultimately originates within the awakened mind of the first Buddha, Samantabhadra, the first Buddha to reach awakening and simultaneously a symbol of our own awakened nature, the Dharmakaya. This event happened countless eons ago before our own universe was formed. The millions of manifestations of Samantabhadra teach throughout trillions of world systems, including in ours. Samantabhadra manifests as the Sambhogakaya Buddha called Vajrasattva, or sometimes Vairochana, in the Sambhogakaya field of unpronounceable realm, which is the supreme Buddha field out of which all Buddhas and Buddha fields emanate, and where Vairochana teaches Dzogchen to Bodhisattvas. Traditional Dzogchen sources add that Dzogchen is taught by the Nirmanakayas, that is, the emanations of the Sambhogakaya Buddha. They mention that Dzogchen is taught in 13 world systems, as well as on our own world system. So that's the flavor of ground. If you get outside of yourself. And so I remind you, I was talking about beginning of this about like the perspective from human being and like the seat of space, just using those two as simple. So while we sit, we can let ourselves go and be this space being in this kind of realm, much broader than, and Shakyamuni Buddha talked about it. So every time Shakyamuni, when you read the older texts, every time he sat down, I mentioned that little piece out of the Lankavatara Sutra, seeing what was in front of him, but usually it's, all this whole entourage of beings, both tangible and etheric, all appearing and to listen and learn. That's real. I mean, you read it and it seems kind of fantastical, but it's, it is, but it's real as well. And I want to read something out of this Dzogchen text. I only have it on my phone. It's called The Supreme Source. Looking for a particular spot. So this is actually, I think it's Namkhai Norbu speaking. But then one might ask, how does samsara arise? How does one enter into the dualistic vision that is the cause of transmigration? Notice the text. The text explains, if at the moment the energy of the base manifests, one does not consider it something other than oneself, and one recognizes one's own state as the indivisibility of essence, nature, and potentiality of energy, the movement of energy self-liberates. Understanding the essence that is the very nature of primordial enlightenment, one finds oneself always in this state. This is called Samantabhadra, or immutable light. This itself is the primordial Lord, perfect in his original condition, without color or form, beyond beyond the limit of size, and transcending the duality of abode and of someone dwelling therein. It is the immutable nature of the fourth time, beyond past, present, and future, the infinite space of self-perfection endowed with the five perfect conditions for the transmission of knowledge until the end of time. This is the pure Dharmakaya dimension, the essence of the Vajra of clear light that also contains the dimensions of Sambhogakaya and Nirmanakaya. And How does the fundamental nature manifest as pure dimension and as teacher in order to help beings? Because they do not understand the fundamental nature due to ignorance and erroneous conceptions. The beings of the three worlds accumulate actions and passions that produce various kinds of suffering. The Buddhas, who with the eye of omniscience perceive the suffering undergone by beings in the same way as a mother who loves her own son, help them with great compassion by manifesting the dimension of the body, the wisdom that abides therein, and beneficial activities. And then again, back to this nature of space. So, like in Buddhist philosophy, Buddhist Hindu, I'm not sure really where how they came together, but there's, I'm sure you all know, there's kalpas. So there's a manifest kalpa and an unmanifest kalpa. Kalpa would be like an eon. So we are in the manifest kalpa. It's divided into four parts. First section is the shortest, and the one we're in is the longest, and it's the degenerative, the Kali Yuga, it's called. And they say it's an excellent time to practice because there's lots of things to work with, more than we wish. But I'm reading this, it's, I don't know, it really resonates with me. And also, like from sitting a long time, there's you, if you stay with it, so to speak, you find things open up and you realize you're peering into, not peering isn't quite right, because it's not with these eyes. It's, there's five kinds of eyes. Normal eyes, Buddha eyes, Dharma eyes, I forget the rest. Let's say we're using Buddha eyes and seeing Buddha's realm. And these are the things that exist within it. And you can see this for yourself. It's written down by accomplished practitioners. But I'm really trying to stretch this out before this session ends because we tend, I find we tend to get caught up in our life, which is totally appropriate. But we also are in something that is vast. It's like, and when I first read the one about Samanta Bahadur awakes and gave birth to trillions of worlds, I immediately flashed on the James Webb telescope. The first shot they took was an area of the darkest part of our sky, the size of a grain of sand. And that image that came back, trillions of galaxies, not stars, galaxies. And everybody went, oh my God, who knew? These people knew. So I'm listening to them, partly because it resonates with my own experience, and partly because they had access in ancient times in ways that are harder for us to get to now. Partly because I think a lot of it has to do with lifestyle, but also just the electromagnetic field of the Earth and the things floating in space around it kind of impacts that. Okay, so I'm going to read this two more things out of this. The traditional texts assert that the promulgation of the Dzogchen teaching is not limited to the human world. For example, the Tantra, the all-surpassing sound, explains that it is found in no less than 13 solar systems as well as our own, and describes minutely, albeit cryptically, the location of these worlds and their characteristics of the beings that inhabit them. Much better known, on the other hand, is the tradition that states that Garab Dorje was preceded by 12 teachers. Garab Dorje is the first human being to bring this teaching. Was preceded by 12 teachers described in the texts as Nirmanakaya manifestations of the primordial Buddha Vajradhara. They lived in different times and places, from the remote epoch when the average lifespan was incalculable, a kind of mythical golden age, until the appearance of Shakyamuni Buddha in our Kali Yuga. Although they probably derived from a single ancient tradition, at times the lists of teachings transmitted by the 12 teachers do not concur, so on and so forth. So, at the time when the lifespan was incalculable in the divine dimension called Joyous Pagoda, all beings had bodies of light composed of the substance of the elements. They were born miraculously, did not wear clothes, and shone by their own light. To transmit the teaching to them, Buddha Vajradhara manifested as a white 8-year-old child in the center of a golden 1,000-petaled lotus, and so on. And then gradually the lifespan started to diminish, and the first tenuous passions arose, causing the decline of merit, and the light of beings abated day after day. Thus came the epoch when the lifespan was 10 million years. In the dimension called Saha, the beings were now born from 5 colored eggs composed of the substance of the elements. And so on until it keeps coming down in years. When the average lifespan became 1,000 years in the land called with turquoise eyebrows in northern Mongolia near a Bodhi tree that had grown next to a self-arisen stupa, and this person was born to his disciples, countless bodhisattvas that had achieved the eighth bhumi. He transmitted the seven special tantras, including the all-creating king and total space. He remained there 120 years. And the average lifespan became 100 years. Buddha Shakyamuni was born as the son of King Suddhodana. At Varanasi and other places, he taught the Four Noble Truths and the diverse gradual paths and accomplished 12 great deeds. So you see how this goes. I skipped, only read you like 4 or 5 out of 12. And then, this is, we were talking about Princess Dorani. Barani. This is the lineage I was talking about. Then Prince, I'm jumping in the middle of it. Then Prince Thuorajahati perfectly understood the meaning of the primordial state and expressed his realization thus. I am Prince Thuorajahati. Understanding that bodhicitta is pure presence that has no origin, I have become the holder of the transmission of Samantabhadra Vajrasattva. Without undertaking the path, I have attained simultaneously the three levels of enlightenment. My state is equal to the Buddhas of the three times. Princess Bharani received the transmission of the essence from Nirmanakaya Garab Dorje. Then she asked her brother, Thuorajahati, for the complete teachings. Thuorajahati summarized their essential meaning for her thus: not being composed of aggregates, mind neither develops nor declines. Neither being born or dying, it cannot be killed or split up. As everything is ultimately nothing but mind, its very nature is Dharmakaya. If you understand, this is the state of enlightenment. Then Princess Bharani perfectly understood the meaning of the primordial state and expressed her realization thus: I am Princess Bharani, Bodhicitta is without the duality of arising and ceasing. Understanding that my mind is beyond arising and ceasing, in it I have found the state of the Buddhas of the three times. In the dimension of knowledge, the limits of union and separation do not exist. Oh, this is the one I was looking for. So Luigi Gyalpa Rigpo was the emanation of a bodhisattva who lived among the Nagas, operating for their benefit. When he learned that the marvelous Dzogpa Chenpo, essence of all the teachings, had appeared in the human world, he reincarnated, so on and so forth. Then he asks Princess Barani for the essence of the teachings. She summarized their essential meaning for him thus: joyfully delight in the uninterrupted vision of the objects of the six senses. Whatever you enjoy, Bodhi will blaze more and more. When one has obtained the power of supreme presence and become familiar with it, meditating means leaving the six sense consciousnesses free and relaxed. It's the peace. All of that come to her. So, like I said, it sounds fantastical, but I don't believe that it is. And I believe that these, we're in a different time. We're in the final slide before the, which in human years is not even appearing. It's more like the formation of the galaxy that we're in is coming to an end in 22 orbits of 250 million years. The decline of manifest realm is what we're in. And that's why there's such chaos. The other thing is, like, that text and others I've read, I don't know about this one specifically, but others were written down and carefully cared for through generations. It wasn't just like somebody just wrote it down and passed it forward a couple years ago. This was done a couple thousand years ago. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong about time, if you know, but and most recently, they were hidden in, some of them were hidden in the caves in China that were uncovered and brought out. And in my rudimentary understanding of it, it's basically those texts, when people read them, it's in current time, it was basically saying we're writing this down for the future. And as one translator said, they were writing it for us. Now we're the future that they were writing for. And so some of these texts are secret, but not the ones I read. I mean, you can go on Amazon.com and buy all these books, all these translations. So, imagine 2,000 years ago, the state of mind of a meditator who could devote your whole life to it. I find that we can devote our whole life to it as well. That's why I keep promoting what Koban told me about ceaseless practice, which was nothing more than that phrase, but it took hold. And but if you can really not to be able to write, hey, I saw, the 12 primordial teachers. It's there's just something I'm trying to say about getting momentarily at least outside of yourself, because everything's formed here by a very clear image of like there's this unified field. And then it's like throwing a pebble in a still pond when the ripples go out. But it's like as now you are, but as you manifest, which can happen moment after moment, like what you bring to it causes this vibration in it. And so it could be, chanting the Heart Sutra brings a certain vibration, having an aspiration around that, may all sentient beings be saved, whatever it is, or, I hate my so and so, all those things affect that field and causes a manifestation. But if you, or even nothing necessarily that direct, it's can be just your, like the broad vow to may all beings awaken and realize their true nature. That also reverberates. Better yet is, I think, is to just sit without any context and just let things be as they are. And it's very hard to describe it, and it's not easy to allow it to happen. But to lose your mind, it'll come back, believe me. But because when you do it, it's like being a baby, so to speak. I mean, you're a grown up, but when you start to come back to consciousness, oh, and now this intention will be different than before. Altruism, compassion, those sorts of elements come into play. And the paramitas are aspects of this awakened mind. I guess it really has to do with altruism and for the benefit of all. The other thing is when you go into the place of true nature, as it's often called, or emptiness, you see that all those vows that we hear commonly make, I aspire to do this or I aspire to this behavior, no getting angry, no killing life, save all sentient beings. In that true nature place, there are no sentient beings to save. So, there, in other words, all the vows are resolved immediately. Only when you come back. Oh, hey, what are you guys doing here? You have to pull that forward out of space and say, yes, we have these aspirations in order to be in harmony with our true nature. Well, I was talking more about, set aside the Four Noble Truths for a minute and go directly to the fourth one, which is the Eightfold Path. And that's, or to the paramitas, or to the prohibitory precepts, whichever one you want to touch on. What I was saying is when you are like you could work your way into this, I suppose, by practicing those things. But that's like provisional practice, like to develop bodhicitta, to develop compassion. If you, and this is what in the Bloodstream Sermon, one major piece of what Bodhidharma is saying is about this, that he's saying, don't practice offering incense, chanting sutras. He's saying, wake up to your Buddha mind. Because that's where all of that stuff comes from. The automatic respect, like, oh, it's not contrived at that point. It isn't like, oh, I got to bow every time I go by the altar or something. And it's an internal thing. It doesn't have to be outwardly demonstrated. And the so what I was saying, when you go to the place of original nature, all those attributes are inherent. And when you come into this manifest realm, you can pull them forward. That's what was done. That's why they're written down that way. Or it's what you know now to be true. It's like you now you read something that Shakyamuni Buddha said, or Garab Dorje said, or some other extremely high level, very refined teacher said, and that sounds good. But you follow Bodhidharma's advice, then wake up to your Buddha nature, and you come back and you read that and you go, that's right. There's an agreement now. Koban used to say every once in a while, like, why do you always chant that same sutra, the Heart Sutra? Every day, chant that same sutra. Make up your own sutra. Which, of course, we're not going to probably come up to that level, but you understand, I think, the intention. Manifest it for yourself so that. Yeah. Which way? Which text?
Oh.
Wayne Ng was selling firewood. I mean, it could be anything.
Realize.
Anything conceptual is ignorance. Not the person, well, it's part of deluded mind. And my understanding, I mean, Zach's been studying this as well, and Andy for that matter, but my understanding is that in part, not exclusively, Dzogchen would be the highest level of Vajrayana practice. And you, if you read enough of it, you'll see that they're saying you don't need to do those practices, which they would call the provisional practices, which is like what Sisi was talking about, where you have a set of practices which bring up certain states of mind or various things. You're visualizing yourself as something, and kind of like if we took what I was saying and reading out of Supreme Source and we all practiced that tomorrow, like imagining it to be so. But what Dzogchen or Mahati is saying, as I understand or as I read it, is that it's provisional and not it's like saturation through and through. It's not it isn't just a veneer that you're creating, you know.
One is that one. A lot of the basically demonstrate kind of early on photo jokes. Not like a single word, but I think in that oh, it didn't happen. Boom. All of this, with anything, there is like additional path. See, ultimately, genetic healing me, grown mind. Let's say that. All good. All designed to be a lot of things like we're doing what we're doing.
Yeah. And, like what Zach was saying about the holographic aspect, where this is the whole thing, regardless of what you do, that's ceaseless practice. So you can be as mundane as cleaning your spoon in your Oriyoki set, and it ties into this field. That's why I've brought it up a couple times, because I don't want you to forget that. Because it's easy to get caught up in life and just, I don't know how it is or how long it takes or any of that. But I've been sitting regularly for a long time. I mean, every once in a while, over a 50-year period, I would go, I'm not going to do this and take a break for months. But generally, it's always on my mind, so to speak. And I had a very good teacher, our teacher. And but it's as simple as, like, how you look at somebody, you're just getting to know them maybe, and they're rough around the edges, or there's some behavior that's kind of annoying you or something, but you look a little deeper and you see the beauty in them. So it's kind of like that holographic aspect where you just look a little further and you start to see the qualities of enlightened mind appear. If you can't see it in yourself, you can certainly see it in someone else.
Really.
Not sure what you mean.
Like,
I'm just...
one thing. Realize that doesn't necessarily not. It's not having.
Right. That's what I was saying. Huineng was just selling firewood. Yeah. And he heard somebody, monk, chanting the Lotus Sutra, and, Or a bird takes off and the leaf flutters down and somebody goes, whoa.
At least perception of my own life. When I've been awake, I have I not know what I have.
I know it had rained and I came out of my room, and I think it was this morning actually, and those either yarrow or what, but they were like super yellow, and it was just, flower disappeared and I disappeared. So it can be any catalyst. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm in light of what Shakyamuni Buddha told you, I would say that he's saying, don't become distracted by that. That question. Focus in on your own self and understanding yourself, your mind, like Bodhidharma says, and resolve that first. But I mean, at the same time, you could, like I said, order the Supreme Source on Amazon, have it here in a couple of days, and start reading it. I don't know if is it considered a hindrance to read it. I mean, it's readily available is what my point is. Some of these texts are considered self-secret, you know, like they're available, but if you read it and don't understand it, you're not ready to read it. Wow. Yeah. Eighty-four is usually used, yeah, 84,000.
Policy. Hello. Hi. Then you might have a realization. For the guarantee experience has well documented number of even all. Oh, yeah.
Little D Dharma or little D Dharma phenomenons, little D Dharmas. But one point is what Wei was saying, and yet here we are studying Zen. So in that context, we can talk about this because we're all bright because we're here. It does say that in some of the Ati texts that are, people of less capability won't understand this. They talk like that. Right.
for yoga posture. No, I think that has to do with everything is kind of so okay. I but in the world, danger of this, but this also benefit.
I don't remember that. But I do think, you know, the danger is that somebody becomes confused about what they're reading, misunderstanding it because they're not in the right state of mind, or they their ego takes it over and makes it theirs, or you know, any number of things, and so it becomes another form of delusion and the behaviors follow. We've seen that in Eastern and Western.
But now here in the West, nothing. Often safer are and open taxi. Stay here.
Sometimes and it's let me think of we'll come back to.
find it. End up. Time by my mother, like, open. So anyway, when I got there, I've never been there. Wow. At that moment, going after, or you know, this concept of birth. There it is. I don't know. I mean, I just thought. Our danger. Going up. Had my own experience by sitting in that spot, in that area where that happened. I just saw myself walking the road. But that was me, and I just saw myself as a son out there. I thought, I can do whatever I want. And I, you know, and I thought, but I'm never going to make stop me perfectly. I'm not going to be now. I have it all. And how fun is that? Once I realized up here, I had it.
Well, it's a good point, Russell, about not going after enlightenment. So there's construing what it is. So you're pursuing some concept. But the other view is that we already are of enlightened mind. And you just need to wake up to that. You don't really need, it's not something out there. This is enlightened mind, what we're experiencing. Like this little excerpt from Dogen, he says, it's from Hukkansan Zenji. The Tao is originally perfect and all-pervading. How could it be contingent upon practice and realization? The Dharma vehicle is utterly free and untrammeled. What need is there for our concentrated effort? Indeed, the Dharmakaya is far beyond the world's dust. Who could believe in a means to brush it clean? It is never apart from you, right where you are. What use is there going off here and there to practice?
In what? Oh. Oh.
And also, you know, if you're seeking enlightenment, why? Who are you seeking it for? You know, is another way of looking at it. That's where altruism comes in. And Well, somebody gave me a copy. Yeah, I haven't really delved into it. Yeah.
Aspect. That has There is that hard work out there.
Yeah, it's not, it's a dynamic activity. But, you know, oh, go ahead. A little bit.
Sensitive. Your effort, all the effort that I do, but that's
just the moon.
yeah. Happy work hard. Rest.
Say that last part. But where do we chant that in the I know I've heard it, but oh, yeah, that's why I don't have that chanted.
That's the point. No, but that's wrong. I think that's wrong. I think but the absolute. Never have to be done.
This is all, this is not the point of sitting practice. This is the debate that happens after. And when we're sitting, none of this is going on. You just let all this go because you cannot realize your true nature through this kind of talk.
And so that is the being
Right. That's why I don't.
That can what? Oh. I think my own town.
I think it's gotten late. It's been a long day, so thank you all for your input.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.